Good evening. I'm Dr. Lee Merritt, your host, once a orthopedic surgeon, but now a professional medical rebel. And I'm actually on site here at the Freedom Law School Freedom Rally, Restore Freedom Rally. And I'm here with Dr. Kevin Stillwagon. Dr. Stillwagon, I've had on the show before. He's a chiropractor by training, but he's also been a Delta pilot for over 20 years.
Right.
So we're going to be talking about really the FAA cover-up of the problems that they're having because they force vaccinated all these pilots. Now, I made the point to a friend of mine, it's not just the pilots, it's also the ground crews, the maintenance crews, everybody involved in your airline safety, and this needs to come out. So we'll be back in just a minute and join the Brighteon shop, use the code REBEL, we'll see you in just a minute.
The Brighteon store understands the importance of getting all the nutrients you need to support the healthy functions of your body. Our nutrient-dense superfoods and supplements can help nourish your body and promote your optimal health and well-being. 100% customer satisfaction guarantee on all purchases. You deserve the best. BrighteonStore.com. Support this amazing platform and amazing Patriots for Humanity.
Use promo code REBEL at checkout for additional savings.
In recent years, the world has only become increasingly more chaotic and uncertain. Disruptions to the supply chain have resulted in global food shortages, making it difficult for us to access the very resources we need to live in a functioning society. That's why it is now more important than ever to be prepared for the unexpected. Here at Brighteon and BrighteonStore.com, we've made it our mission to help you and your loved ones be prepared for any emergency, which is why we are dedicated to bringing you a wide selection of ultra-clean and lab-verified superfoods, supplements, preparedness items, and other health products. So support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
I feel that Juvent is helping me to get better every day in every way.
That impact is what has been shown to help improve your bone density. Without that impact, you're missing a very important nutrient in your physical conditioning program.
The Juvent Micro Impact System allows the person to create more joint range of motion. Now I know there's a chance that nourishment can take place to that joint.
Get one of these.
All right, we're back. And Dr. Stillwagon, you're here. Thank you for joining me. Now, he just spoke at the Freedom Law School Restore Freedom Rally, and I snagged him off the podium there to come do this. So, tell us what's going on. I mean, I've heard that they've made changes I knew this was going to happen, by the way. They made changes in what they'd accepted, the passing score for the flight physical. And
right.
That, you know, that used to be sacrosanct. And I was never a flight surgeon, but I can tell you everything they're doing violates the military manual for flight surgeons.
Yeah.
And I just can't believe it. And now it's also in the civilian world, too.
See, so a pilot's got to go through a physical twice a year in order to be a captain, okay? Even a first officer, you got to have two physicals a year. One of those requires what's called an EKG. But the problem is it's what they call a resting EKG. So you're just lying flat on a table, and they record the normal, it's called a PQRST wave, and you've probably all seen what an EKG looks like. And they record that for anywhere from 10 to 20 seconds, and they're looking for a normal rhythm. And when they find that strip that's normal, then they send that off to the FAA. They verify it. Yeah, that's normal. And you go ahead and get your medical
clearance.
Certificate, clearance. You're good to go for another 6 months. Now, or actually it's another year until you get another EKG, but every 6 months you go in for a routine physical. The problem is it's a resting EKG. You're not going to have a problem show up in an EKG unless you're put under stress. And so the Canadian pilots actually do this. Every 2 years, they're required to do a stress EKG test. So they put, they attach you to the EKG, you get on a treadmill, and you get that heart rate up. Now, when you do that, then these little things start to show up, like little arrhythmias.
Right.
They start to show up, or maybe there's an extension of the normal time that's supposed to be existent in an EKG starts to extend out a little bit, and you'll start to see those things. Okay. The problem is, what's happening right now is because of this shot that pilots got, they are having two issues coming from this, and they're known issues. One is the microclotting.
Yeah.
Okay, so that can affect the vasculature of the heart. And this is something that a pilot or anybody who got the shot can be aware of, because if it starts to clog those coronary arteries, you're going to get the angina pain, the classic chest pains that might radiate up into your arm and into your jaw, maybe even into your arm. So that's not a good sign at all. The other problem is myocarditis. Now, myocarditis can be entirely subclinical. In other words, it has completely asymptomatic. So myocarditis is basically an inflammation of the myocardium or the pericardium, the sac that surrounds the heart. Why is that happening? It's happening because the spike protein that is created by the shot is an irritant, and it's inflammatory. And so the spike protein has an affinity for what are called ACE2 receptors. And the ACE2 receptors are lining the blood vessels. They're also on the myocardium. And so when those spike proteins attach, that now causes inflammation. Inflammation draws in white blood cells and more fluid and cytokines, and that causes a little bit of swelling. And then that starts to interrupt the normal electrical pattern in the heart. But this is something that you won't normally see on an EKG, unless something starts to happen that's called an extension of the PR interval. The PR interval is the time delay that it takes from your heart to take the blood that's in the upper chambers of the heart, the atria, and squeeze it into the ventricles. And the ventricle then is what's going to pump it to the rest of your body and to your lungs, depending upon which side of the heart we're talking about. Anyway, that time delay is called the PR interval, and it has been firmly established in the literature, and it's in all the cardiology textbooks, that normal range is 0.12 seconds to 0.2 seconds. Anything over that is diagnosed as a primary heart block or a first-degree heart block, because something is blocking the transmission of that signal. Now, what could that be? It could be an arrhythmia in the atria. Okay, so they did this because pilots now are starting to show an extension of that PR interval. Now, what's bad about this is there was a study that was done, and this is the way a study really should be done. It took 33 years to do this study. What they did was they started in 1968 and they went out to 1974. And they found 7,575 people that had this extension of that PR interval. And then they watched these people for 33 years to see if anything would happen, okay? And they published their results in 2007. And what they found was that there was a 2x risk of you having an atrial fibrillation, which can be deadly. You don't want this happening in a pilot.
Certainly not suddenly.
No, and there's 3x risk of having to have a pacemaker installed to control the rhythm of your heart. And then there was a 1.5x risk of having an early death from all-cause mortality, which could be a sudden death.
Okay, so if you were coming into the pilot world, you're a student now and you want to be a pilot, and they screen you and you're found to have first-degree heart block, can you qualify?
I don't think so.
So again, we're accepting now for safety people that are already flying that wouldn't qualify as 25-year-old incoming pilots. And these are older pilots, by the way.
Correct.
That are not as likely to survive an acute episode.
Exactly. And so, you know, you brought up an interesting point, because when an airline first hires a pilot, they want to make darn sure that that pilot is...
Yeah, they are squeaky clean.
Very, very squeaky clean. And so just the fact that you have a first-class medical certificate, that's not good enough. They put you under a stress test.
Right.
And they do other tests as well. I mean, they poke you and prod you, and they look for this and they look for that. They look at your family history, too.
Yeah.
They want to know everything, because, you know, pilots, they're responsible for hundreds of lives.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you and I talked about this the other day. You as a surgeon, I mean, that's an important, prestigious job. But how many people are at risk at one time?
Right.
You know?
Usually one.
when you're performing your occupation. Well, with a pilot... No, it could be hundreds of people. And so that's why there's always two pilots up there.
Right.
They need that redundancy of having, two qualified pilots up there in case something goes horribly wrong with one of the pilots. That's called pilot incapacitation.
Right.
In fact, the airlines train for this all the time. They do it in the simulator. They will have a scenario where one of the pilots will be pulled out of the seat for no reason, and then they tell the remaining pilot, well, your supporting pilot has just gone incapacitated. And then they put you under a situation where the weather gets really bad or something goes wrong with the aircraft, and they want to see how you can handle that as a single pilot.
Right.
And so that can be a very stressful situation. So here's the problem, Dr. Merritt, and you've probably heard this because your ex-husband, I believe, was a pilot.
Yeah.
And aviation is described as hours and hours and hours of boredom, interspersed with a few seconds of stark terror.
Like anesthesia.
Yeah.
Same principle.
So what happens when you get that thing that happens?
The adrenaline rush, the cardiac output goes up, your heart rate goes up, and now you're more at risk for these arrhythmias.
Exactly. And see, that's what the problem is, because that's all it takes is an increase of adrenaline, and that can cause that hidden atrial fibrillation or even a ventricular fibrillation to just start the heart into a fluttering instead of a pumping of the blood. And then you're going to lose consciousness. And
right.
If you don't get the heart restarted, you're going to die. I believe that's probably what happened to the football player.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Now, there's another... So, remember, and a few weeks ago, or when was that? We had the death of the pilot in the cockpit.
We did.
Okay, now, so what you're describing is, fortunately, that co-pilot was experienced.
Very experienced,
but nonetheless, he was stressed. It's a horrible scenario, and my heart goes out to both sides of that. I mean, the family of the dead pilot, and the guy that had to fly the plane by himself with a dead pilot next to him.
Exactly.
I mean, how stressful would that be? The average person can't possibly, I think, imagine. We can't imagine what that's like. But now, what happens now? I mean, what if that person isn't as experienced?
Yeah, and see, you got to throw some other things into the equation here. If it's a crystal clear night, which it was in Chicago that night, I mean, he could see the airport,
right,
and he was able to turn the aircraft and get it back on the ground safely. Now, if the weather was really bad, now you have to rely on the automation of the aircraft, and reprogramming one of these aircraft to land at a different destination than it was originally set for, that's a big deal. It takes a while to do that. So now you've got that remaining pilot tasked on reprogramming the automation of that aircraft and talking to air traffic control and flying the aircraft. You see? So if you've got an inexperienced person up there, this could turn bad.
Wow.
Is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I don't say that this is going to happen. I'm just saying that we're setting ourselves up here for something that the FAA should be vigilant, and they should be preventing this from happening. And I've said this before many, many times. The FAA can either be preventive in things that they do, or they can be reactive. We don't want to be reactive here. We want to be proactive. We want to start testing pilots right now with very simple tests. The D-dimer test can show if you've got increased evidence of blood clotting. And if you have that, there are things that can be done to reverse that.
Yeah.
And it's not going to ground the pilot, okay? Another thing that we can test for is the troponin level. If your troponin levels are elevated, there is evidence that you've got damage to the heart muscle. That won't necessarily ground a pilot either, but it will induce that pilot to search further to find out what's going on. And if it's a definitive diagnosis of myocarditis, now the pilot's grounded. If you have myocarditis and there's a definitive diagnosis, you cannot be issued a flight certificate at all, even to fly a small aircraft.
Now, just out of curiosity, that pilot that died, I think he was like 41 or something.
He
like
was
that.
53 or 54, I believe.
The new, he was just going to be a captain. That was his last check flight.
That's right.
Okay, so 53 is still very young. I say that.
It is.
70.
Yeah.
So did they do an autopsy? Do we know what happened?
We don't know.
Are they doing autopsies on any of these guys?
We don't know.
That's what bespeaks to me. They're covering stuff up, and that bothers me a lot.
Because they are.
I found myself the other day when I flew down here, I found myself comforted that not only did the pilots look like they were okay in the cockpit, I kind of peeked in, but that there was a third pilot in a uniform in the first class taking a hop, and I thought, okay, I'm glad we have another backup. Isn't that pathetic that I'm thinking?
Yeah, and so, you know, when this whole issue first started, the idea was that, you know, we got to have at least one pilot in the cockpit that hasn't been jabbed. But we can't do that anymore.
There's
because
not enough left.
Because they coerced pilots into doing this, you know, telling them that this was the safe and the right thing to do, and that it was going to protect them and protect the passengers and protect their coworkers. Well, we all know that that was an absolute lie, and they knew that right from the start.
Right. And so if that's a lie, you got to say, why are they lying? Well, this is not for safety. So if it's not for safety, it's an attack on us, and we better start acting like it's an attack on us, and not just put blinders on about this. What do you think the number of people? Do they know the percentage of pilots that have an increased QR interval?
We don't know that yet.
It can't be smaller. They wouldn't be doing this.
No. And we need to know why the FAA unilaterally came out and extended that PR interval. And we need to see some data.
Right.
And we need to have some clear reasoning on the rationale for doing this. Because any cardiologist you talk to about that, they're going to say, what? Are you nuts?
Right.
You can't.
And, you know, we know they know this because we just heard from a pilot about Davos that all the guys over there, the pilots are unvaccinated because the Davos guys asked them to be unvaccinated. And they were saying that, and I won't say the source, but that there was the whole bunch of them, the Davos and this, you know, the big guys, the Uber, I used to call them the Uber elites, I think we ought to call them the Uber parasites. None of them are vaccinated.
Right.
That got out. The guys over there know that that's what's going on.
Yeah.
So we've been had, and we're going to be even more had if we allow this to continue.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you said it's an attack.
Yeah.
And they even use terminology that's military, because the program that they set up to compensate for people that can prove that they were injured by this shot is called the countermeasure program. A countermeasure is a military term.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I understand actually that somebody's pointing out now that this actually was run from DARPA, DOD, it actually was, the reason it got pushed through the FDA and everything is because they claimed it was a national security countermeasure against a foreign enemy. Well, I don't believe that to be true. I think, said years ago, we've met the enemy,
and
he is
us. I think the enemy is coming from within. That's very
but
clear.
But the FAA, it's sad. The pilot associations, the pilots, are they not complaining about this because they have everything to lose and nothing to gain by the FAA Well, I guess they're worried about their jobs, but come on, at some point,
you know,
about your life.
Yeah, most pilots have unions. There's a National Pilots Association, and there are also individual pilots associations at some, individual airlines. But we found that the unions are not supporting the pilots' interest in this. And I can't figure that out either. Now, listen, we got to talk about something else real quick. People are saying that you can't start testing these pilots because it's gonna shut down the whole aviation industry. So
that's what's going on.
Not every pilot that got this shot is gonna have myocarditis.
Right.
Because this thing is so variable. I mean, you gotta think about this. When you go in and get the shot, you don't know where the tip of the needle is when they push the plunger. If it's in a vein or a capillary bed, then the particles that are in the shot are going to rapidly get into your bloodstream, and they're going to go to your brain, they're going to go to your heart, and you get a higher chance of developing a myocarditis issue when that happens. If it goes not into the blood vessel, maybe not so much. Another thing is you have no idea how many particles are in the shot when they mix it.
Yeah, they're also variable batches.
They're completely variable batches, and that's why they have batch numbers.
Right.
And it's always been that way in the vaccine industry. That's why they are required to have batch numbers, and they're required to go track and see what happened to these batches. And if they find a, quote, bad batch, they're supposed to be pulled from the market. That's the way this whole process is supposed to work. Another thing is they put polyethylene glycol in these shots to keep the lipid nanoparticles from sticking together, right? Because it's fatty material. And so if they don't check for that properly, you could be injected with coagulating goo that within a matter of minutes or hours can cause a deadly stroke or a heart attack.
And
we have seen that happen. We saw it happen right on camera.
Well, by the way, so on that question, how long after vaccination do the pilots have to wait before they can fly?
The rule is 48 hours.
Oh, that's nothing.
No, that's nothing at all.
Because most of the deaths that we see are within the first 14 days.
Correct.
The immediate deaths.
Yeah, the immediate deaths.
So, but they're not even waiting that long.
No, they're waiting 48 hours. And a classic example of that is a pilot by the name of Cody Flint, an agricultural pilot. And he waited 50 hours before he got into the cockpit and started to do his job. And while he was flying, he started to have narrowing of vision, and didn't think too much about it. Maybe this is just a temporary thing, but it got worse, and he barely got the aircraft back onto the ground. And when he was examined by his doctors, they entered into his medical records that this is a vaccine injury. And so the chief surgeon for the FAA, her name is Dr. Susan Northrup, has stated that there have been no pilots that have been incapacitated by this shot, which is an absolute lie. And Steve Kirsch has brought this now to the public domain. He just printed a Substack article on that this morning. And he is calling for her to take immediate action on this, to actually talk to several pilots that have been injured by the vaccine without question. And she has got to acknowledge that this is happening.
Right.
And the FAA needs to take action now.
Well, I think you and I did a show here a long time ago, but after Captain Snow's episode.
Yes, we did.
When he had a cardiac event right after he landed.
Yeah.
So how can she say that? Oh, she's just saying it's not due to the vaccine. This is the same issue. It's all coincidence theory. So none of these deaths are related to the vaccine because you can't prove them on an individual basis, but they're not looking this is not how we do science. You know,
right.
You're supposed to be looking at the statistics here.
Correct, yeah. So you got to step back and look at the big picture. And she did admit to Steve Kirsch that she had heard of Bob Snow and what happened to him, but she never reached out to him.
She had heard of him.
You would think that a person in charge of medical flight safety would want to know more about this.
You know, it's interesting. There was just on Telegram or someplace I read that they had shown Elon Musk's recent.
Yes,
thing.
I saw
did you
that.
See that?
I
and
did
he
see
had just
that.
Said that he'd gotten his first or second booster, which, if that's true, then and he's not written into the program with the rest of the Davos guys, but right. And whatever this means, he said he felt like he'd almost died after he got, he was yeah. dying after he got
well,
the,
you know,
the booster.
The truth is coming out.
Yeah.
It's coming out slowly. Right now, Steve Kirsch had a poll that he did that showed that about 22% of the people believe that they know someone for sure that was either injured or killed, and the only explanation could be the vaccine. Unfortunately, that number is going to have to get higher.
Right, and I actually found more on my own little survey, but we're going to be back here in just a minute, and I want to talk about other body parts that are affected, because it's easy to do an EKG, but how do we check the brain? So we're going to talk about that when we come back. Again, go to the Brighton store, use the code REBEL. We appreciate you being here. Support the show. We'll be back in just a minute. All right, thank you. I'm Dr. Lee Merritt here in Florida at the Freedom Law School Rally. It's the Restore Freedom Rally. And when I'm not here, by the way, you can find me at themedicalrebel.com. It's three words, themedicalrebel.com. And this Brighteon show. So thanks for joining us, and we're back with Dr. Kevin Stillwagon, a chiropractor by training and a Delta pilot who has a lot of understanding of what's going on. And we were talking about the cardiac issues, but you know, it's one thing to do an EKG, but a lot of people, when I reviewed the VAERS data early on and tried to publish this, because we could see early on what was going on,
right.
But nobody would take the paper. It was, and by the way, that was March of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So that might have made a difference. You know, it wasn't just cardiac issues. It was brain bleeds, and it was brain,
right.
And it was strokes, and it was other neurologic issues. Which, you know, if you're the average retiree, you know, sitting home watching TV, and you lose vision in one eye, no big deal. But if you're a pilot,
yeah.
I kind of think that is a big deal.
It is a big deal. It's a huge deal. So there's
a whole other.
Yeah, there's a couple of things going on here with that. So we talked about the spike protein and how that's inflammatory. And so there are ACE2 receptors all along your blood vessels and arterioles. Now, if that affects your brain...
Yeah, which we know it does.
We know it does. It crosses the blood-brain barrier. These lipid nanoparticles are made of natural body fats, cholesterol and DSPC. And... the reason they did that is because they want it to be able to go everywhere in your body and deliver the message to make the spike protein. Not a good idea, especially when this happens in the brain. And so if you got, you know, these spike proteins created in the arterioles that are in your brain, it can weaken the arterial walls and they start to leak, and that's called a brain hemorrhage. If they block the arteries, then now you don't get the proper amount of blood and nutrients to certain areas of the brain, and that's called a stroke. Okay? So, when this first starts happening at the initial stages, you will get these little events called transient ischemic attacks.
TIAs.
The TIAs. And this is what's not a good idea for a pilot, because it can disrupt your vision. It can take away your peripheral vision, or worse, it can take away your forward vision and you're only left with your peripheral vision. Now, this is a temporary thing. That's why they call it transient. It's going to go away. But what's so bad about this is the pilot, if a pilot has this happen, they're not going to admit it to anyone.
With so much of the world's current food supply consisting of dirty, contaminated, genetically modified foods that may have been grown using herbicides and pesticides, increased scrutiny over what you put in your body is of the utmost importance. Even supposedly organic foods found on most grocery store shelves may contain toxic substances, chemicals, and other additives that can be harmful to your health. That's why here at BrighteonStore.com, we subject all our in-house products to extensive lab testing for glyphosate, heavy metals, and microbiology using our state-of-the-art spectrometry equipment to ensure the highest quality of cleanliness and purity. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
Satellite phones have been wiped out globally because of the supply chain collapse and war in Europe. But a truly amazing new option has emerged, the Bivy Stick, which allows you to send and receive text messages using almost any mobile device without relying on cell towers at all. In a world where war, riots, or a power grid failure can happen literally at any time, the Bivy Stick and its two-way satellite messaging gives you the power to reach loved ones, to send emergency messages, or request a rescue. And to use this device, you do not have to register your name, and you don't need to turn on location services or reveal your geographic location. The battery life is several days in duration, and you can easily recharge it using a small portable power bank. There are only about 20,000 Bivy Sticks that will be available in America this year. Get yours now while they're still available at sat123.com. That's sat123.com.
And it goes away because it's not testable.
No, it's not
testable.
Well,
and the other point I'm going to say is with a trans and ischemic attack, you know, we talk about the vision loss because those are the ones that are recognized.
Yeah.
But I suspect, and I think this is true, that, you know, if the ischemia happens in an area of the brain which affects higher cognitive functioning,
yeah,
but doesn't affect your vision, you just get foggy thinking.
You do get foggy
thinking.
And
so that brings me to that near miss in the New York airport.
Yeah.
You know, are we, you know, and I tell you, we're seeing a lot of, to me, and I used to follow this all the time with my ex, the private plane crashes.
Right.
They seem to be up. Are
they
up?
They are up.
Yeah.
They
and
are up.
We had a colleague that died, a doctor, but I think that's what's happening.
Yeah, we have one of our pilots at the U.S. Freedom Flyers that's doing a deep dive on that and checking into the increased incidence of general aviation accidents. And it's happening on the highways, too. Anybody can look this up. The DOT figures, you can look at it. They are up. And, you know, the general feeling is that these people are losing consciousness and some of them are dead before the car
the
even
accident.
Crashes. Yeah. And so, but again, this is something that you can't see.
Right. And in car accidents, it's one thing, you know, that we all have the experience, I think, of being a little bit fogged sometimes and not almost missing a stop sign or something. But that's a whole different problem when you're in a jumbo jet.
Yeah, you don't want this happening. And, you know, again, we have two pilots up there, but unless the pilot that's having the attack is admitting to the other pilot that something's going on, that other pilot has no idea.
And there are critical points, obviously, like when you're landing and things, even if the guy knows there's a problem, if it happens too close to the tarmac, you can't recover, right?
No. There's critical phases of flight, and obviously it's during takeoff and landing because you're in close proximity to other aircraft, to buildings. Everybody's got to be on their toes during these phases of flight.
So what happens if they actually do what we're suggesting, and that is actually look at this critically and not let people fly that have these abnormalities? What's going to happen to the airline industry?
I think it will be affected, but not in a major way. And the reason I say that is because there was a study that was already done on a group of individuals that were collegiate athletes. This was done in December of 2021, a year after the shot rolled out. They looked at about 1,600 athletes across 13 universities. All of these universities had mandated the shot. The study didn't say whether they got the shot or not, but they probably did. And they were looking for myocarditis. They wanted to see if it was evident. They did find it in 2.3% of the people that they tested. And of those 2.3%, more than half, 54% of them, were completely asymptomatic. They even had normal levels of troponin, but they did the gold standard of testing, which is called the cardiac MRI, and that's how they found these incidences of myocarditis. So in that subset, it was about 2.3%. Now, what's it going to be in the pilots? I have absolutely no idea, but my gut feeling is that it's going to be about 30% of them that are going to have some kind of a myocarditis issue.
And why do you think it's going to be more?
I think it's probably going to be more because many pilots are not athletes, and they haven't taken good care of themselves, and they've already got some kind of a comorbidity that's going on.
It wouldn't by itself be serious, but you add this.
Yeah, everything, you know, the human body is cumulative in many things that you're dealing with, and it takes time, and other factors are involved, like your diet, whether or not you exercise, all of these things, whether or not you smoke. I mean, all of these things come together. So I have no way to know, but unless we look, we're never going to know.
You know, that's the joke in medicine. There's an acronym, WNL, and it's supposed to mean within normal limits. When you look at labs, and we jokingly say it means we never looked. But unfortunately, in this situation, it's gotten very serious. I have to say, to me, it seems like the airlines is going to have more of a problem. It's one problem if they address it and we feel comfortable flying.
Right.
But it's another problem if they don't address it and they have some, you know, they've had some near misses, but they haven't had major catastrophes yet. They have one major catastrophe, and people are going to start saying, I'm not flying anymore. Right. I already hear that.
Yeah, we don't want that to happen.
Right. Flying actually statistically is safer than driving long distance.
It is.
And it won't be if we keep this up.
No, it won't be. And, you know, actually, I was just talking to a gentleman about this the other day. The most safe flights right now are international flights because they're double crewed. They have to be double crewed. So the flights that are most at risk are the very, very small airlines, like the ones out up in Nantucket that just fly to, you know, short little hops. Those are single pilot flights. And you definitely do not want to get on a flight like that if the pilot has been jabbed. You're definitely putting yourself at risk. The next higher risk is regular domestic flights with two pilots in the cockpit.
And, you know, through the grapevine, at least, I've heard that there's been at least one situation where both pilots were incapacitated, but they were able to revive the one pilot to land the plane.
Yeah.
You know, can't prove that. I'm confident that it happened. But
That was hearsay. But I could see where that...
Hearsay from a very close source.
It could happen. But, you know, it's happened in the past. And this is pre-COVID.
Yeah.
And I know this for a fact because it happened at my airline.
Okay.
Two pilots fell asleep. And they overflew their destination.
Yeah.
And so the flight attendants were able to recognize the fact that, hey, we should be on the ground by now. And they, you know, they rang the buzzer and knocked on the door. And oh my God, the pilots woke up and turned around and went back. And nobody got hurt.
And that's essentially what I heard happened this time. Only it wasn't that they could, one of them could not be revived.
Right. Yeah. So, we're setting ourselves up unless we start looking. Now, you know, the FAA has a thing that's called an Airworthiness Directive Program. And I'll give you an example how that works. If a mechanic is just doing a routine inspection on aircraft and he finds a bushing, for example, that's wearing out prematurely, that gets entered into the logbook. The FAA sees that. And we'll say, all right, now we need to start looking at all of these aircraft. It's called an airworthiness directive. It does not ground the fleet. It's totally transparent to the flying public. You have absolutely no idea that this is going on. But they put a time limit on it. They say, all right, all of the planes in this fleet have to be checked for this. If we find the part, we replace it. It's happening all the time. We need to do the same thing right now, but it's got to be the personnel, not parts.
Right, and it's interesting that in medicine, we've always talked about using the FAA, you know, pilot kind of safety, the safety standards for airlines in medicine, where you didn't get punished for, you know, telling somebody that there was a problem, that you encountered a problem, or you made a mistake, or there was a bad something going on, but because of the litigious nature of medicine, everybody's been hiding this stuff for a long time. So, it's been hidden for a long time. And so now we're in that situation with the airlines. It looks just the same.
We are in that situation. Now, you mentioned something earlier about, we were talking about ischemia.
Yeah.
And that's where the microclotting comes in and you're blocking the proper blood supply and oxygen that gets to certain tissues of the body. And as you mentioned earlier, Dr. Merritt, this can happen anywhere in the body. It can affect not only the brain and the heart, but other organs. And what happens is, over 2 to 5 years, and this is established in the literature, 2 to 5 years is how long it takes if you don't get that that ischemia problem stopped. You will develop a pathology, a chronic illness of some sort. 2 to 5 years down the road. Now, are they going to tie that to the shot?
No.
Of course not.
No. They're not even doing that with, you know, if an elderly person dies, no, they were just 83.
Yeah.
Even though, who was it that just died? The famous, there was a singer that just died, 81 years old. But he was completely normal.
Right.
And it, when you actually, when they came out, when they actually looked at, I think it was the Medicare population, when you actually looked at the deaths that were happening, there was a bump in deaths
right
between 4 and 14 days after the vaccine, so or within 14 days after the vaccine. So it's not just elderly people die, but the fact that they all have this commonality is kind of
So speaking of commonalities, we kind of alluded to, we were going to talk about this, where I actually did a deep dive on looking at pilot deaths that were reported in the ALPA magazine. And so I was able to track back from 2019 up until the present time to actually look at pilot obituaries and confirm pilots' ages of when they died. And I found clear evidence that since the shot rolled out, there's been a 40% increase of pilots dying before the age of normal retirement. That's never
40%
happened.
40% increase, which goes along... So, and there's two other factors that go along with that. So number one is the actuaries that have been saying this, and then they were shut up. I have a friend who's on the board of an insurance company, and he said they can't even get the actuaries to report to them anymore. I said, don't you pay them? And they said, yes, but that's just because by law we have to have an actuary on the books, but they're not giving us the numbers now.
No.
They're being pressured to shut up, which is what's going to happen.
And there's more numbers that are coming out now, and that is the filing of permanent disabilities or disabilities.
Yes.
This has happened at American Airlines. They have acknowledged that their filings from the pilots have increased by 300%. And this is since the shot rolled out. That's not normal. The same thing happened at Delta Airlines. Delta has a pilot self-funded program where a certain percentage of your paycheck every month goes into a big fund that's managed. And it's been working for decades perfectly normally to, you know, support pilots that go out on disability. Well, last year it ran out of money.
That's never happened.
That's
before.
Never happened before.
That
there's a signal there.
Right.
These are all signals that something is wrong, and we need to look a little deeper.
Yeah. Now the other thing I did, I looked at the FIFA. You know, a friend of mine who's European and they're more into soccer than I am, but he was talking about how the equivalent of like 10 or 11 soccer teams are now dead. Professional FIFA quality soccer teams. And so I tried to look into that number to verify it. I couldn't verify that number because FIFA doesn't keep, they may keep tabs, but they don't publish all-cause mortality on and off the field. But they publish on-field deaths.
Right.
And they go back to 1889, which is very interesting because for 110 years between 1889 and 1999, the number of deaths on the field was 0 to 3 all the time. It was 0 to 3. And they were mostly, interestingly, lightning strikes. Don't play soccer when it's a cloudy day, I guess. The other thing it was is like collisions. And occasionally the gold thing fell over and killed somebody. But it was extremely rare. There were only 2 maybe or 3 in that 110 years that were cardiac. Now, what happened is in 2000 something changed, which to me, I can speculate, but in 2000 the number of deaths went from 0 to 3 to 3 to 10, and it's been 3 to 10 up until 2021, and they're mostly cardiac. And now in 2021, the year of the vaccine, it was 27 on-field deaths.
Right.
Almost all cardiac.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a clear signal.
Clear signal.
Yeah.
And yet they will say, well, this is the argument they always use, compared to the number of people vaccinated, this is a very few number.
That's
not the way you look at it.
So, you know, there's some good news here, though.
Okay,
because we know that most of these cardiac incidences are happening after the booster shot.
Yes.
And so many pilots now are smart.
And they're resisting.
They're not going in for those booster shots. So hopefully that'll keep this level of myocarditis lower than what I think it might be.
So they're a lot smarter than the doctors, at least in Canada, that we've had, I think that was, I can't remember, now I've lost the number, I think it was 600, something, enormous number of doctors in Canada dead because Justin Trudeau and the boys mandated the booster shots.
Right. So, you know, I got to give the audience a very simple explanation of why the booster shots could be involved in this.
Yes.
Okay.
That.
So, when you get the first shot, it creates spike proteins. That's what the shot is supposed to do. Now, your body's reaction to that is to create an antibody against that spike protein. And it does do that. That's what our bodies were designed to do. But those antibodies don't last in your blood forever. They wane over time. That is perfectly normal. If we kept every antibody that we ever made, our blood would be sludge. We wouldn't even be able to pump it. So what's most important about antibodies is the memory to be able to quickly remake those antibodies. So the idea is that when you get infected a second time, those antibodies will be quickly reactivated and they'll be able to attach to that pathogen and stop it from entering other cells. That way, your experience of symptoms will be less, it will be shorter, and it will keep you out of the hospital. Okay? That's the general idea of how this is supposed to work. But when you go in and get that booster shot, you're not putting spike proteins in you. You're putting the message to make spike proteins. So your body can't see that until those spike proteins start getting produced. So we talked about this earlier. Those lipid nanoparticles are going everywhere in your body. They're merging with the cells, and your cells are going to start cranking out those spike proteins by the billions. Now your immune system sees that. And your immune system is going to overreact because it says, I already dealt with that spike protein. I have the memory to quickly remake antibodies and stop this from happening. They shouldn't be showing up in these numbers, but here they are. And so it kicks in what's called the complement system. It's like the heavy artillery of your immune system. And that is highly inflammatory. It attracts numerous white blood cells to all cells of your body that are either making the spike protein or have the spike protein attached. It secretes cytokines, which are damaging. They not only damage the cell that's making the spike, but they can damage normal tissue around it. When that happens in the heart, that's called myocarditis. But it can happen to all parts of the body, and that's called multi-system inflammatory. Exactly. So I think that's playing a role in this. So if you got one of these shots, don't get a booster shot, because the evidence is clear that the escalation of multi-inflammatory syndrome and myocarditis is higher after the booster shot. So,
and in favor of that, I know we had there was an orthopedic surgeon, young guy in Tennessee, who had COVID and he'd been sick. So he'd just gotten over being sick, and they gave him the vaccine.
Yeah.
And he had this. He died of multi-system inflammatory disease, or system syndrome.
Exactly,
and,
because he already had the antibodies.
Yeah, he had the antibodies, and it was fresh.
They were there.
Now, for those of us who are not convinced that there's genetic material in these vaccines, I will tell you that argument you just made, though, still works just on the coding.
Right.
You know, and I would say that, As a skeptic in all this about what they tell you versus what they really did, because they still haven't told us what's actually in the vaccine.
No, they haven't.
You know, the Japanese did a pharmacokinetic study, and they showed that the coating, just the lipoprotein, the nanolipid coating, collected in the ovary 65 times more than it did in the skeletal.
That's
muscle.
Right.
So there was a paper published in 2016 from Australia on sterilizing mice and rats. They didn't like the mice outbreaks, and it's self-disseminating vaccines in emerging infectious diseases is the name of the paper. But it's that point is that you could make, and this is Karen Kingston's point, is what you're calling the spike protein, it might be from mRNA, or it might be a self-replicating artificial spike protein acting the same way. And it would give you all the immune problems you're talking about.
Yep.
So we don't have to be correct about the deep details to understand that what you're talking about, the immune system, is absolutely true.
Oh, it is absolutely true.
And that's what's killing people.
Yeah, and you know, there's an old saying that it takes a disease years to kill you, but an overreactive immune system can kill you in a matter of minutes.
Right. Now, let me throw one other wrench in the works. The last 2 minutes, we don't have much time, but I'll do it in a minute, and then you can close. Chagas disease. In the 1992 Olympic Games opening, they came out with these weird symbols. This is, dying babies and slave ships with these spike protein looking like virus particles. I mean, it's a weird, weird thing. Anybody go back and look at it. But one of the things they brought out was this weird brown C-shape, looked like a stuffed animal, but it's like float. I thought, what is that? And then I've been studying Chagas disease. That is a parasite that they're showing you, parasite of Chagas disease. Now, the reason I bring that out is Chagas disease has a propensity to, some people just get chronically infected and die late. But there's a certain subsection that has, they get infected with this, it's not recognized, and they have acute myocardial infarct death as a result of this parasite, and it's usually not diagnosed correctly. Now, that's another potential that could have been in the vaccine or could be, I don't know. I'm concerned that there's other stuff going on here we don't know, but it's giving you the same output.
You know, and that's what I really love about you, Dr. Merritt. You are a person that is looking at all possibilities, all avenues of approach to what is happening. And we need to have more doctors like you. And we also need to have more doctors that are willing to investigate all avenues of approach on how to address people that got hurt. These poor people were coerced into doing something that they thought was right. And now they're hurt.
I would say that's my, if you go to my website on themedicalrebel.com, that's what I do there.
Right.
I tell people what I think. Just my opinion, if I had taken the vaccine, what I would do.
Right. And that's so important.
Yeah.
I wish you could
fly me home. What's your last word on this whole thing? they might call you back into action.
Yeah. If you got one of these shots, people, don't ever get another one.
Yeah.
Just don't do it. And that is medical advice. And I'll give it.
Very good. Thank you very much. And thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Thanks. We're having too much fun in Florida here.